Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujeet Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 104, being recorded on the 24th of November, 2015. My name is Sujeet Mallow, and on Skype for Business with video, I have Evan Basilek and Kale Teeter with me. Hey, guys. Nice to try a new format this time. Some of our audio listeners may not obviously appreciate this, but we are recording the video of this podcast as well this time. And I don't know, if it works out good, we might post it up on YouTube and other channels just to see listeners like that format in addition to the audio format.
If we see a dramatic drop off on our listener base, we may have to reconsider this.
I agree.
It could go either way. Right now.
But originally Kale had somebody lined up for today. We had a speaker lined up, but fortunately had an emergency and couldn't make it. So we have a whole wealth of topics to talk about. And of course, we're going to talk about scaling in Azure, as Kale puts it, to infinity and beyond. And that'll be the prime topic for today. But before we get there, let's just talk about some updates that came up. And Evan and Kale were nice enough to put some stuff in the show notes. So let's see. Evan, you had something in there for the performance impact of premium storage in Microsoft Azure. Anything?
Oh, yeah. So I'll give a little shout out to one of our listeners, a guy by the name of Brian Laws. Brian actually attends the I can't remember whether he found the podcast first or started attending the user group that we have in Charlotte first, but he does both. He does a lot of work with Azure and he's been doing some performance testing with SharePoint deployments in Azure. And because he does a lot of that kind of just, I guess it's part of, you know, some of the services that he's a consultant that he does. He's been testing recently the same exact deployment, standard storage versus premium storage. And so he sent me an email and, you know, pointed me to this blog post that he had done, really demonstrating how if you have an application that is disk intensive, the significant impact that you can have in used by leveraging premium storage. And, you know, again, this is not like, you know, Microsoft marketing, you know, team generate stuff. This is a real, you know, user using, you know, doing real workloads and doing real world testing, and he's seeing a huge benefit. So I just thought I'd share that with everybody else, plus give him, you know, kudos for that work.
That's good. So it's kind of a benchmark comparing the two numbers. Is that what he's done? Excellent.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll put a link to that in the show notes then. And Kale, you had some updates in there. The Azure, which one do you want to go for? You pick.
Yeah, the first one is the preview portal or the Abiza portal. So there's been an update in November here, the November 2015 update, and a couple things there, just kind of some tweaks, I'll call them, it seems like, that we're coming through with. Good stuff from a UX standpoint. So basically, when we're browsing for things, the panes or the tiles or things that slide out whenever you're clicking on resources kind of behave a little bit more naturally now, right? So they take up more screen real estate. Like the left side, if you've used the portal, it kind of collapses now once you start drilling into something. And then as you close the panes, it kind of pops back out again. So it's a little bit more natural to navigate around. There's been some stuff on the notifications. So before we had different kinds of notifications that would come through as you like start provisioning, because most of this is asynchronous. So some of the stuff would be like, okay, we provision a VM and then we wait. And you know, you would usually get a tile on your dashboard if you chose to pin it there. But then also there was a little toast notification or something that would pop up then whenever it was finished. So that's kind of toggleable now. Like in the settings, you can actually turn that off. So if you don't want the toast to come through, you can turn it off. You can keep it on. So it depends on kind of what you're looking for there from a UI perspective. And then there's, you know, some simple visual updates. The dark theme has been updated with different colors, so it's kind of high contrast now a little bit more. especially with some of the charts and things like that. It looks much nicer when you're browsing through it. Oh, the other one was in the marketplace. When you go to marketplace now, used to be you'd have to go into the actual marketplace, like the blade would slide out, and then you could do a search. Now you can do it directly as soon as you hit new, like a tile slides out and shows you like some categories, but you can start typing right there at the top. There's like a search box, and so you can drill right into whatever you're looking for faster.
It was a quick search to get into what you're looking for. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I do have to say it's kind of neat to see that the portal has advanced to the point that we're actually thinking about UX stuff, right? I mean, you know, you go back a couple of years, we were just thrilled just to have functionality in the portal. now we're actually trying to polish it and make it better. I mean, that's great.
I didn't realize they had actually officially like updated it this way, but I just noticed it was looking a lot better recently. So, I noticed it in a big way. So I'm glad to see that they're making those updates. So the second thing on the list over here, which caught my eye at least, is we can now use Azure Machine Learning to get data from the SQL Data Warehouse. So what this means is that you could just, you know, fire up machine learning, create a new experiment, and then wire up various tables or data from SQL Data Warehouse as like a kind of a GUI setup over there. And very easy, you could get that data and, of course, you know, crunch it and come up with some meaningful information out of it. So I thought that was a nice update to machine learning.
Yeah, the other one that kind of caught my eye, and there's one particular part of this that really caught my eye. So the PowerShell story, you know, up to this point has been, you know, we had basically before 1.0, we kind of had two different sets of PowerShell commands. I think we talked about that on the show once where we had to switch modes. And then we came 1.0, and we kind of consolidated those a bit. So there is no more switch command, but we kind of appended RM to a bunch of commands that are in there. Yeah, but it's all about ARM in there now. And so one of the things that was kind of missing, or, you know, wasn't there before, was this the notion of using certificates for authentication. So if anyone's used ARM, you know, it's driven by Azure Active Directory. If you're an old school, you know, Azure guy from way back, you remember we used to have management certs that we could use for authentication.
All the time, yeah.
Yeah. And now with this one, and I wasn't even aware of this till just recently, but we can now do certificate authentication with ARM. And you can see that in the PowerShell 1.01, I think it is that right now. And so basically it allows you to configure a service principal in Azure Active Directory so that you don't have to pass, you know, your client ID and secret and those kind of things when you're coming through. You can actually use a certificate so you can generate a self-signed cert and you can pass that through. And there's an example we'll put in the link dump for how to actually do that. Great use case for like things where you're doing automation or you have like service type accounts that need to run in the background where it's not an actual user and you don't want those interactive prompts and things.
Yeah, I'm going to actually have to send that. I had missed that change. I'm actually going to have to send that to one of my colleagues who supports Azure Automation because he just had a difficult conversation with a customer probably maybe a couple, 3 weeks ago that, you know, the new versions of PowerShell weren't supporting certificate stuff and Azure Automation, it's all basically scripted. Right?
Yep.
So now he's going to be thrilled because now they're going to have a way to do this.
Yeah, the other thing about the PowerShell just this week that happened to me was, and this is just kind of a kudos to the open source nature of what we're doing now, but basically I had a colleague who pinged me and said, hey, what happened to this command? And it was referencing one of our data disk commands. And he said, I don't see it there anymore. Where is it? What happened? And so it was like, okay, well, hang on a second. So I just popped up to the GitHub. And opened a source to see what's going on, and said, well, it's not there anymore, and, like, responded to him, said, hey, why is that command missing? And, I mean, it wasn't probably 30 minutes till I got a response on that board saying, yeah, so here's the direction we're going with that, and I was like, wow, that was fast.
Great.
So that was that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I would actually encourage all of our listeners, I guess our viewers now, too, but I would encourage – our audience to, if they run into, you know, some weirdness with the PowerShell stuff, this, like you said, Kale, this is the power of the open source. Definitely go out to GitHub, you know, browse to the PowerShell. I find myself going there trying to understand, hey, why am I getting the behavior that I am? I mean, the code's all public, right? And it's just consuming the REST APIs. So It's a great way to, if you just can't quite figure something out, a lot of times you can figure it out by looking at that source.
Now, the one thing that I noticed about this PowerShell update is that it's actually PowerShell 1.0. I think we've always been in 0.9 something before, and we finally hit 1.0. It's a big day, I suppose.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure if I understand. Like, I don't know what the trigger was for going to 1.0, because it's been around for a while.
I know.
That usually is, you know, a sign that, you know, whatever trigger
sort of
we
maturity.
Hit, yeah. Yeah, we've got some level of maturity, so.
And then the last update has been in the Azure App Services. There have been updates to the mobile apps, API apps, and the logic apps. The one that caught my eye was the fact that we talked about how there's this easy authentication now that's possible for the web apps. And that same easy authentication, which is using the Azure Active Directory, is now available for the API apps as well, you know, for your APIs and for your mobile apps. So you can have that same, easy authorization of people calling into your apps or your mobile apps or your APIs. So I thought that was something that's big in the updates. And there's a couple of few other updates as well. Okay, so let's get right to it then. The big topic we want to talk about today is, I guess it's a big announcement, but just also open it up into a discussion on the announcement was related to Azure Virtual Machine scale sets. And we wanted to make it into a discussion on how Azure has come a long way in providing a way to scale almost to infinity and beyond, as Cale puts it. So, Cale, you want to kick off that discussion?
Sure, yeah. And I talked to the guys earlier. I was mentioning, scale sets is a good thing to talk about. It's a new, and to be clear, it's in public preview at this point. But the thing is, I wanted to kind of take a step back and say, how did we get here? What was kind of the driving factors of this, and how did we start out with this kind of stuff? Because, you know, with scale, that's like a big thing for the cloud, right? So that was one of the primary reasons for, you know, something like the public cloud, is to be able to scale to infinite, from storage to compute to whatnot. And, when we started a long time ago, years ago, we had essentially what amounted to kind of a library. We had started around kind of auto-scaling these kind of things. So not only being able to provision infrastructure and that kind of things behind the scenes, but having our application react to metrics and things like CPU or load on the server and be able to actually scale. And we had a library, I don't know if you guys remember, it was called Wasabi. And Windows Azure Scaling Application Block Interface. And essentially, it was a set of libraries that would allow you to do this. And people say, well, why would you need a library? It's pretty easy. We just instrument the cloud, the platform, to say spin up a new one. But, you know, there's a lot more to it than that. It's not just about being able to, like, spin up and spin down machines. It's also about how do you kind of smooth those waters out and kind of have a governance there around how big it could go, you know, how small it goes, and as well as little tweaks inside of there. So if the CPU shoots up for just maybe a second or two or even 10 seconds, should you take action, you know? So that's kind of a hard thing to kind of get your head around a little bit, is how do you make sure that it scales when you want it to, but not on these little peaks and things that happen in the middle. And so that's what the libraries were designed to do, is kind of help you build that so that you could do it. And then as we went along, you know, especially with PaaS services, a platform as a service, those were relatively easy to scale, right? Because we just said, we're not controlling the VM as much. We didn't have as much control over it. So we would just tell Azure, hey, we need this size. Go ahead and spin us 10 of them up. And if you see the CPU go above this point for X amount of minutes, go ahead and spin another one up until you hit this limit. And that worked pretty well. And we could use Wasabi with it. And then it kind of got integrated into the portal. Our metrics and things started to move into the portal. And then as those things moved into the portal, the auto-scaling went into the portal. So now you had sliders in there that you could actually drag, and you could actually set your auto-scale settings up in there. And that was great. And then people were like, well, what about IaaS? You know, because at that point, IaaS had gained some steam, and there's a lot of people, you know, running a lot of IaaS workloads. And so they're like, so what do? Can we scale ours? And because PaaS was basically provisioning the operating system in the virtual machine, it was easy for it to do it. But when you were provisioning it yourself, it's like, how do we kind of do that? And so the old story was, previous to this, was, well, if you said, okay, we can still do that, but you said, okay, maximum I'm going to need is maybe 6 VMs. Great. So you spin up 6 VMs, and then you shut down 4 of them and leave 2 there, and then go ahead and turn on your autoscale settings to say, you know, if it hits these limits or these metrics get triggered, go ahead and spin up or turn on more instances, basically, and then also spin them down if not needed. And that's kind of where scale sets then kind of fit in, was like, how do we take that to the next level? And so basically around that is, and it kind of came apart as ARM because it kind of fits really closely with how ARM works, but it allows you to basically scale a set of virtual machines. So we don't have to be so tied directly to like things like NICs, and Evan can comment on this, but like the NICs and the extensions and all the pieces that make up our VM, not just the VM, but those pieces are now kind of first-class citizens, right, in ARM. So we can now start to build an ARM template to say, hey, let's start out with 10 machines in here that we need, or maybe even smaller. Let's say it's 3 or 4 machines we're going to have in this cluster. And then we can go ahead and tie that into what has evolved from our metrics into what's called Azure Insights Autoscale now. And so we can start to read the metrics and have that thing be, you know, feeding into this to say, if it goes above this certain point, again, just like we've kind of evolved to, go ahead and spin up some more VMs inside of this scale set. So I don't know if you guys want to chime in on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, I mean, that's definitely the way to look at it. The PaaS was powerful, but the problem with PaaS was you had, like, you know, like you mentioned, you had to do custom code. Right, and skill sets really get you out of that. And when you tie ARMs, I guess I like the description you use of first class citizens for everything. It definitely makes it a lot easier. The other part that I keep hearing and keep seeing, and I actually haven't played with it yet myself, is that the skill sets are much, much, much faster to deploy. And so, you know, it used to be. And I don't know if you've deployed a PaaS instance recently, but I was doing one the other day. It was about 10 or 15 minutes before it was up and running and accessible, right, actually able to service workload. And that's an eternity if you have some sort of workload spike.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just trying to get my head around this. So you said in the past, before scale sets, what was our story for IaaS scaling? We could tell it how many instances we wanted, correct?
Well, basically, we had to pre-provision it,
right?
And then we shut them down, but they were actually still there. They were just sitting there, you know, shut down.
Right.
And then Autoscale would turn them on and off, basically.
So how is now? So compare that with what we're doing now with the scale sets.
Yeah, I think, and that's what I was saying, I think ARM kind of enabled a lot of this, because now with ARM, we're able to declaratively describe what our IaaS instance is, right, with JSON. So we can come through and say, use this image, make it this size virtual machine. Here's how we describe the NICs and all the different things that make up that virtual machine. And obviously, there's dependencies on those, so it knows how to spin up, you know, and link all these things together. But I think that was a key enabler to be able to do this, because now we can basically describe what our VM is in JSON. So we can just say, go ahead and do another one of those, or that kind of thing.
I see. So not just a single VM, but could be a related set of VMs as well that you're scaling up and down.
Sure.
I see. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. And so what's the are there any limits in this? Like, or is it just set any maximum number and you could go as high as you want?
How many cores do you have? I mean, from everything I'm hearing and you know, reading about them, and again, like I said, I haven't played with them myself yet, but the limiting factor is really the resources that you're willing to consume. You know, we'll let you provision as much as you want. Now you can do it very quickly and very easily.
Yeah, I think there's one right now, and I think it's just because it's an early preview, and it's per scale set, if you want to call it that, because that's kind of like the grouping. But per each one of those groups, we can do 100. But yeah,
100 VMs, basically, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's just something I think I heard because it's in preview. So you know, who knows whether that'll increase or whatnot. But
yeah, and I would bet that's probably what we call a soft limit.
Yep.
Right, where I suspect that's something that we set just kind of, and to be honest, that might actually, it wouldn't surprise me, actually thinking this through a little bit, it wouldn't surprise me to see that be the default soft limit even when we go GA, just because we try and be, you know, if you look at the way we handle the soft limits, we, and to be honest, we're protecting both customers and we're protecting us, right? Like, you know, if you're a customer, you probably don't want to somehow accidentally spin up 10,000 VMs, right? Just typo, you know, you put a typo in a config file somewhere. All of a sudden you spin up 10,000 VMs and you call us in a month and say, hey, I got billed for, you know, 2 days at 10,000 cores. That's a non-trivial dollar amount.
Yeah.
And then I think the reverse is true as well. I mean, we're in this business to make a profit. I mean, that's kind of the whole goal. I don't think we want somebody to spin up 10,000 VMs and then not be able to pay us. And again, those are resources that another customer could theoretically use as well. I mean, the cloud is infinite scale, but the reality is there is a capacity that the data centers can handle. And when we go above a percentage of that capacity, we add capacity. You know, but if somebody spins up 100,000 VMs, right, and they don't really mean to, that's consuming capacity that they really don't need to. But I bet if you call subscription management, they could probably bump those limits at any time.
Yeah, the other thing I've heard mentioned about that is, and if people are into this, especially if you're doing something non-trivial in Azure and you need to raise those limits, one of the ones is cores right away, because that's set pretty low by default. But, you know, the thing is, I think it could go up. I think the maximum right now we have listed on our site is like 10,000. But it's not like you call and say, okay, just give me 10,000. It's like, no, you'll call and say, I need 500 or 300 or something like that. And the other thing that's kind of feeding, I think, is some of our capacity planning and stuff like that. So if we see, you know, people start consuming that and committing to, yeah, I'm going to have like 200 or 300 VMs up here, I think it kind of feeds into that workflow as well.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I know from talking to this, I know some of the subscription management folks, and I don't know what the cap is on some of these, like where the bar goes, but I do know that there is a certain level where we are going to probably go do a credit check against you.
Yeah.
You know, if we don't know who you are, we're probably going to do a check, right? But, you know, again, it's not malicious. We're not trying to be mean. It's, you know. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, up to the physical limits.
Yeah. I'm trying to understand, though. So I understand that the VMs, you know, can grow and shrink based on load provided by the Azure Insights Autoscale facility. But these VMs, are they based off an image, and does the image have to be prepped when you start it up? Like, you know, in the past, you would take an image and then you would have to run some scripts to get it up to the level of software that you needed before you can make it available in the pool. Does that still have to be done?
It's a good point. There's a couple ways in ARM, and that kind of, I think for me, it just comes back to an ARM thing. So when you're doing ARM templates, you can, you know, there's a repo that we have up there. I call it a repo, but it's our kind of our gallery or images that we put out there, you know, as part of Azure. So we have Windows and Linux and all the different other things that are some of our partners even put up there that you can use. So you can leverage those right out of Azure. So you could just put that in your ARM template and say, I want Ubuntu images with MySQL on it, or I want Windows images with SharePoint or whatever, you know, all these different things we have up there. And then, but you could also make a custom image, like to your point. So if you had a custom build that you want to do like a gold image, you could bring your gold image with your ARM template and do that as well. That would just be something you would set up and do it. And then on top of that, configuration management, where this kind of all ties together to DevOps, you know, using Chef or DSC or something like that, right, to once that machine spins up, how does it get its load and all the different software you need on it?
Right. And then that's when it's ready to be kind of put into the pool, so to speak, right, and made available.
Yeah, the nice thing about a lot of that stuff is you can put it in ARM templates and use these dependencies in there to basically drive it and say, like, okay, spin up the VM, but then after the VM's done, do this. And you can kind of – it's not conditional logic, but you can build dependencies such that it waits for certain things to happen before it does the next step.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the other – one other thing that, you know, talking about spinning these things up, I know one of the other things that I have – seen discussed about these is that we are doing these in parallel, right? And again, I think like you're saying, Kale, I mean, a lot of this comes out of the ARM constructs, but we're doing these in parallel rather than if you look at PaaS stuff, there's a lot of a serial nature to it, right? We're locking the subscription and we're spinning up a VM. Like if you've ever watched the PaaS instances spin up, you see them go one by one by one.
Yeah,
and the I think the scale sets really allow us to go out and scale. So if you get a much faster provisioning effort in the end as well.
And they've thought of everything. I just looked at the blog item here, and it says that they even have a way to configure the NAT rules so you can connect to a specific VM instance for troubleshooting. Because that's typically what happens, right? You may have 100 VMs, and one of them is a bad apple over there, and you need to get in it. But it's part of the pool. How do you get into that one VM? And you can set up these NAT rules so that you can allow maybe just your IP address or whatever to go directly into that bad VM, you know, and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I
think the other thing that's kind of cool about this too, and ARM enables, kind of becoming an ARM fan here, figuring out all these little intricacies it has. But one of the things is, so you can set a capacity on this, and the capacity in your ARM template for your scale set, and also back to the first class citizen, scale set is actually a resource type or a first class citizen again. So it's not just like a VM. Like in your ARM template, usually you have like Microsoft.compute/virtual machine. That's a resource type, but now there's one just for scale sets. So it has its own kind of schema to drive it. And so inside of there, one of the things you set is capacity to say, here's what I want initially in there. Go ahead and put 10 VMs in there to begin with. But you can also put this thing called this upgrade policy, which is kind of cool. So what that says is, okay, I'm going to put these 10 machines in there, and you can specify whether you want manual or automatic upgrades. So now if you come along and make a change to your template, you could say, I only want it to affect the new machines that I put into there going forward. Or you could say automatic, which basically says, go ahead and restart or update all those ones that are in there. So you can kind of control how the update kind of works when you start making changes to your template.
Kind of rolling update or something like that,
yep.
Using update domains, something like that. Okay, very cool. Wow, I like this. Yeah, I think this is definitely. And the other thing that I guess we should point out, you probably mentioned it, it just became apparent to me, is that this is not just about the VMs, right? It's also about the scalable NIC and the scalable storage. It integrates well with the load balancers. As these machines come in, they're automatically added or taken out from the load balancer so that a good workload, some of the workloads where this may be very popular is obviously the front end web servers, right? Where you made a number of copies of something just for scalability. And I think that they made a comment over here that the Azure Container Service, which is our, you know, little our facility where you can create container, you can add container VMs, actually makes use of VM scale sets, you know, for its clusters. So we're already
I would say that doesn't surprise me. The other thing, and full disclosure, I have no inside knowledge of this. This is just an educated guess on my part. But if I had to guess, right, we're coming up on Black Friday, and then with Cyber Monday the following Monday, right, it would not surprise me in the least if there's some TAP customer in this preview who is using it, and they're going to spin up a ton of VMs come Cyber Monday, and then come Tuesday they're going to spin them back down.
I'm pretty sure they have the limit set to 100 right now. So
yeah, definitely.
Cool. That's a very, very good call there. Okay, great. Nice topic, Cale. Thanks for bringing that up. Anything else you want to add to this, guys?
No, I'm actually kind of thinking, well, and you know, this is starting to get ahead of me. I want to go play with this now, but I also want to go play with Docker, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, and I want to go play with the Service Fabric. So I'm just running, you know, good thing I have, you know, 5 weeks of vacation that I have nothing better to do.
Well, you got to take care of stuff at home, right? And get your house in order.
No.
Okay. Definitely. I've been playing around with the Service Fabric, both the one on premises as well as now they have it in the cloud as well in Azure. So it's very nice to see that that facility out there. It's so cool. All right, guys. Great. Thanks. This was a good session doing it over video. It's nice to see you guys and discuss at the same time. So definitely a good experience for me, at least. And we'll see if our listeners like it as well. Well,
yeah, we'll have to put a survey up somewhere and say whether they like us, how they want our other pictures.
Yeah, I
back,
suppose,
right?
You know, if the listeners like it, they can give us a thumbs up, a thumbs down on our Twitter handle and let us know, right? And we'll
swipe right or something, maybe.
That's right.
Know.
Yeah, we'll count out all
Sounds
the
good, guys.
Results. And happy Thanksgiving to all of you guys. Hope you have a good holiday. All right.
Yep. Thanks,
thank you, guys. Okay, man. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.